Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, so a little bit of setup on this episode. Last Friday, when WWE looked to be going Rock versus Roman for WrestleMania, I got a DM from Rob McCarron right after SmackDown ended, saying, "Hey, I need to do a podcast now." So I recorded about 30 minutes worth of audio with him. After Rob, you're going to hear the normal Shake Them Ropes, which is myself and Chris Novembrino, which was recorded a week after that. A week and a day, actually, on Saturday, February 10th. So you're going to get both before and after. It's going to be interesting. But thought, you know, before and after, that you guys would be interested in that. So for now, enjoy Shake Them Ropes. Hey, kids, it's about 7 minutes after SmackDown ended. Rob has been bar hopping since 4 p.m. his time.
4 p.m. Eastern daylight. No, it's not even daylight anymore. Daylight happens like a month from now.
No, so Eddie's about to go out, but he's rallying and he had something to say. So emergency extra audio.
I mean, unbelievable.
The floor is yours, sir. Just for context, The Rock has returned and totally cucked Cody.
The Rock is back. Well, here's the, we all knew this was happening though, right? Like,
he was going to come out at 30 or 29.
It could. I mean, so, but I watched the segment unfold. So Cody.
Yes.
Cody Rhodes is telling Roman Reigns, right?
Yeah.
He's coming for him. I don't even know where to start. Number one, he's retconned the story. What does finishing the story mean? It doesn't mean him winning the title that Dusty never could. That's not what it means anymore. It means taking everything from Roman Reigns. That's what finishing the story means now.
That makes no sense.
It makes no sense. No, he wanted Dusty's title. So yeah. Seth Rollins on Raw.
Made his title.
He called it, because it's the workers' man title. He defends it every week on Raw. He's defending it with a bum knee. That's the Dusty title right now. Jeff, I don't know where to start.
Okay. Let me start with this then.
Start, and then we're going to go into everything.
Because I said the major weakness of the Cody promo on and the Seth promo on Monday was that Seth was doing this. Oh, the Roman plays office politics. It wasn't that Roman won't fight you like a man one-on-one and he's going to have his cousin come in here and hit you with the Samoan spike or whatever. It was
cheating. A lot of cheating going on.
Seth says I won't cheat or whatever. You know, it's
cheating.
Like, yes.
No, there's a lot of cheating going on. Everyone seems to forget that. Oh, Roman Reigns has the super long.
Yeah, and then they go, he's such a great champion. It's like, no, he's not. What are we talking about here?
Cody Rhodes' first mistake. Well, I mean, is he a great champion? Yeah, I would actually give him the great champion thing, but
he's smarter than stupid baby faces. Congratulations.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Randy Orton. Randy. Like, you probably still got Ted Jr.'s number. I mean, he might be in jail right now. I'm not 100% sure. But you still got people's number. Like, you got Matt Riddle's number. Like, bring all these guys. Bring them all in. Let them. You got, who was the Samoan that doesn't exist anymore?
Oh, he played the Snuka.
No, not even that one. Not even that. Do you remember when Legacy was going on, right?
Yeah.
And they brought in the Samoan for a week?
Yeah, wasn't that
Wasn't he the cameraman
for the Undertaker Shawn Michaels thing? He took that.
That was Deuce. I'm not talking about Deuce.
Okay.
And now I have to figure this out.
I'll get it.
Well, I'm going on a rant. I need you to search for this for me.
Okay? I'll do it.
I'm doing it.
Go ahead.
The problem started when, Seth Rollins made a convincing argument. Like, you don't want to go for Roman, right? You don't want to go for the cheater. You don't want to go for the guy who only defends his title every quarter. You want to go for the working man's title that we've put on the map for the last year. Like, Seth Rollins made a convincing argument. Obviously, it worked. The problem here is Cody didn't use Seth Rollins' announcement or Seth Rollins. He said, I consulted with The Rock, and The Rock told me I should go fight Seth Rollins right now. Oh, by the way, The Rock chimes on in and says, yeah, go. You should go fight Seth Rollins. And who's going to fight Roman? I guess I'll do it.
Oh, yeah.
Suppose I'll do it. If you don't want to.
That girl's friend really, really likes you. You should go off with her for a while.
you see that bigger girl over there? You know what? She's really the one you want.
Okay, I have your answer for you. There was Manu. Part of that, but Sim Snuka was also part of Legacy for a while. So
no, yeah. Shut your mouth. Okay. Shut your whore mouth, will ya? Like, Rickens, who do we say? Manu? Manu was the guy I'm talking about.
Okay. Yes, Manu.
Manu is the guy I'm talking about. Manu back. Hell, bring Sim Snuka back. Why don't bring Domino back?
But you've hit it exactly.
Bring Cherry back.
Oh God, you've hit it exactly right. They retconned all these stories to make it fit what the story they want to tell now.
So anyone, you're going to hear Brian Alvarez. You're probably going to hear Sean. I love Sean Rossap. You're probably going to hear a report from Sean. You're probably going to hear all a report from all these guys that, hey, CM Punk got hurt and they had to rush The Rock into Mania. The Rock was always coming to Mania.
Rock was always coming to Mania.
So what the hell was CM Punk going to do? If The Rock was, The Rock is not a situation where you rush him in. Always working Mania. Was Cody the odd man out? Was Cody not actually going to get a championship match at WrestleMania? Because CM Punk was not. And if he was, it was Seth. Then Cody Rhodes was out. Cody Rhodes, you can't have CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, and The Rock, all three going for title matches at WrestleMania.
Well, one was going to get Drew.
I'm sure one was going to. That's what I'm saying. Drew wasn't a champion.
No.
So one was going to be outside, and that was probably going to be Punk. Let's be real. It was probably going to be Punk.
Yeah.
He was out. So this whole, I'm missing WrestleMania, I'm missing the main event of WrestleMania.
No, I'm thinking one of these is going to be a three-way, though. I still think it's going to be probably Cody Rock.
You could have a four-way with Seth. And we talked about this last week on the episode, on the 1,000th episode in a row that we've done together.
Yes.
We talked about this, is Drew was the rightful person in that match because Drew was on fire.
Mm-hmm.
Bryan Danielson won the main event of WrestleMania 30. You want to know why? Because he was on fire. He was the top guy. CM Punk got kicked out. Drew McIntyre is that right now as a heel, which is unbelievable. Drew McIntyre is the guy. I was hoping he was going to get a singles match, somehow like beat Seth Rollins at the Elimination Chamber. I was hoping, because imagine Drew and Cody right now. If you're going to do a singles match outside of Drew and Seth, the only one that right now would draw of the people that are available, like, as much as I love Gunther, like, Drew and Cody would have been on fire in 2 months. We have more than 2 months to go till WrestleMania. Drew and Cody could have been on fire. So, yeah, it could have been a multi-man match, which is probably, I don't think that's what was going to happen, but it could have been. Cody was going to be the odd man out, or CM Punk was going to be the odd man out. You can decide on who that was going to be. All I'm saying is next week we're going to hear reports of, oh, CM Punk changed what was planned and they brought The Rock in early.
They were really worried about their 2-day sellout in Philadelphia.
What are you talking about? Now, this is a straw man argument, obviously, because it hasn't happened and it may not happen.
No.
I'm just saying.
No.
I'm expecting, you know, and all the credit to the people. They obviously know things, right? They obviously know things. But this is going to be one of those silly ones where it's like, CM Punk's injury changed everything. It didn't. It didn't. It didn't change.
And there will also be like documentaries on the WWE, whatever the network is, on Netflix or whatever, when they finally poured all that over from Peacock or whatever, and it'll be on Peacock. It's like, yeah, you know, CM Punk put us in a really tough position, and we thought, you know, the fans deserved something big and memorable. And so,
yeah, you want to know why CM Punk was okay with waiting till next year for WrestleMania?
Dwayne.
Because he was already waiting for next year for WrestleMania. Like, he knew coming in, okay, CM Punk, you know what? We're going to come in. We're going to bring you in, but not right away. I mean, not right away, main eventing WrestleMania. I'm sorry it was going to happen. But next year, great. And you know what? Next year it is. Next year, this year is the Cody Rhodes show. It's the Rock and Roman show. Next year, we're not going to have The Rock. Cody Rhodes or Seth, one of them will be hurt. You can fit right in there. Who knows?
And they're about to kind of do this, not exactly the same thing, but similar thing with the women's Rumble winner with Bayley, because it's Bayley and Io, but everybody's just going to be waiting for the build for Becky and Rhea to come in and do it.
See, I don't think so. Like, I think the Becky Lynch show is kind of over, to be honest. I think the era of Becky Lynch being like that top dog is just over. Like, she's super, I mean, she's high card, but she's not the Roman Reigns of the women's division.
You watch. It's going to happen.
I mean, if you're forcing me to watch. I just want to say, all right, of the four, of who is available without bringing Bill Goldberg in, because thank God they're not doing that.
Right.
Of who is available, the top four matches, as they seem to be right now, are the best top four, right? Cody and Seth, Rock and Roman, Io and Bayley, and then Rhea and Nia Jax. Like, that is the top four. Do you not believe Nia Jax is getting the Rhea match?
I think she's getting Elimination Chamber. I don't think she's getting Mania.
Okay, that actually might be true. And then the Mania match would be what?
Becky and Rhea.
And if that happens, that's still, of what's available, that's still super good.
Yeah.
That's still super good. Because, I mean, personally, I would like, if they do Jade Cargill and Bianca at WrestleMania, like, that's super good. If they do Jade and Nia, and then maybe Bianca and someone else, like, that would be cool.
You probably get a multi-tag match with the Kabuki Warriors in some way.
Can you imagine, though? Like, I'm just thinking about this right now. And I'm not so in tuned anymore to, like, the... all the news organizations, and knowing, like, it used to be in November, Dave Meltzer would tell you that, hey, Bray Wyatt's going to wrestle The Undertaker. Bray Wyatt's going to wrestle John Cena. And you're like, how the F do they get there? And then that happens. I'm not in tune with what's supposed to happen. Kabuki Warriors versus Bianca and Jade Cargill.
Oh, that would be something.
Can you imagine? I'm imagining it right now, and I can't really talk. because I'm imagining it so hard right now. Like, I'm excited for that one. There's a lot of good stuff that's going to happen on these two nights. I mean, it's one of those where I'm like, I really wish this was one night. Like, it, two nights is great. They're giving us more. It's awesome. I really wish it was one night because that card would just be so stacked to beyond belief. Like, unreal.
I think it's, I think actually the one thing that's going to hurt them is I think it's going to be cold in Philly in April. And, well, yeah. And outside in the stadium. I mean, we went to Rumble.
They did it in New York. They did it in New York in late March.
Yeah. So it rained.
Yeah. Well, it's fine. I mean, it doesn't rain on the performers. Like, who cares? I mean, this is a television product.
No, you're right.
After you look at the Netflix deals and after you look at the USA and Fox deals and all these things, like, it's a television product. If 50,000 people are inconvenienced, so be it, because 2 million people are going to be watching the show every week. And that's where we get our money. Like, who cares? And people are still going to go to WrestleMania. And if they watch Cody Rhodes defeat Seth Rollins for the title, yeah, people are going to go ape. But Roman Reigns is going to beat The Rock, right? Like, The Rock ain't winning that title.
And then we do another year of this crap.
Because what sense would it make to The Rock? You're like, Roman Reigns, you end 3 years of being champion to The Rock, who's not going to be there every month. And yeah, you could say, oh, well, it's the same. Roman's not there every month.
I thought of just the worst thing they could do is they have Cody beat, like, Priest at Elimination Chamber to get the briefcase, and Cody comes running down with the Money in the Bank briefcase.
I mean, there were people, not to be straw man all night long, but there were people talking about how Cody could finish the story against Roman. Damian cashes in that night
and pins Cody, and that's it.
Cody finishes the story, but Damian walks out. Damian Priest isn't quite there like Seth Rollins was. Like, no. I love Damian Priest.
Yeah.
I didn't think Punishment Martinez was going to do anything in WWE, and Damian Priest has exceeded all expectations.
He's outkicked his coverage. Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. So whatever they do there, I'm not trying to fantasy book. I'm not trying to tell WWE what they should do. But what they've done in a lot of ways was hilarious. I mean, Cody's saying, I took counsel from The Rock and he said I should go after this other title. And by the way, who's going after the title instead? The Rock. And falling for the Seth Rollins argument, like, hey, this thing you've been looking for your entire life, literally your entire life, trying to do the thing that your dad couldn't and proving that you could. You decided, you know what?
Nah.
I still want to do that. I still want to do it. But does it have to happen at WrestleMania? Like, I could finish my story at a fucking Madison Square Garden on a Friday night.
You know, like, Dusty didn't want to win the title at Starrcade. He wanted to win the title at the Bunkhouse Stampede.
Yeah. I mean, if the story, I mean, let's not retcon it ourselves. They've done plenty of this already.
Yeah.
The story was Cody wanted to win that title. It did not have to be at WrestleMania. The timing just worked that he got the match at WrestleMania because he won the Royal Rumble. He wins the Royal Rumble again. You know what? I'm going to beat Seth Rollins. Okay. And he should. I mean, Seth Rollins can't win that match. If Seth Rollins wins the match, then you might as well fire Cody. Like, what the hell are you doing?
I'm sorry, but the whole story now, it was once Roman beat him, he's on the journey now to get back at the guy who beat him for the thing that his dad wanted most. It's not that hard to tell. And yet here we are.
No, I get it. But if you're Cody and you've lived this life for the last year, right? It's like Seth Rollins has beaten everybody for this title. Literally, he's beaten Drew Galloway. He's beaten, is that it? Is that kind of it?
That's kind of it.
I mean, that's kind of it. Like, we can talk about Seth Rollins defending this title every week.
The MacGuffin title or whatever the hell we want to call it.
Drew is kind of it. Like, Damian Priest, I think he had a match with Damian Priest. Maybe, probably not, because Damian Priest has a brief. I'm literally trying to think of, like, who he defended this
title
against.
I think he defended against Damian Priest at one point, and then he didn't cash in. He still had the briefcase, so he could have hypothetically cashed in after that for a rematch right there, and he didn't.
It was quite a night. I was surprised that Bayley chose EO tonight. Like, they did. They have 2 months. 2 months until WrestleMania. I thought some of these would go a little bit longer, like the intrigue would be there.
They never do that, though. They never do the intrigue thing. It's always like within a week.
It's got to be that day.
You know what it is. Yeah.
It's got to be that day. Yeah, but this is a whole new regime. I mean, this is the new people deciding.
Oh, trust me. By the time we get to Mania, it'll probably be Tiffany Stratton versus EO.
I wouldn't mind that. I wouldn't mind. You want to know who, Tiffany Stratton tonight. Like, I am not, you know, I told people on this episode last week and for the several weeks prior, because I've been on every week, Tiffany Stratton. I mean, I didn't know much. It's Tiff Stratton. Like, literally, they're doing Trish Stratus. They're doing Trish Stratus with her, trying to make her the same thing. Tiff Stratton. Super, I want to see more Tiff Stratton.
She's great. She is.
She is?
Yeah.
I think people who haven't given her a chance, like, admittedly myself, not that I haven't given her a chance, I just haven't been, like, super into what she was doing. Tonight on SmackDown, like, why are you going after Bron Breakker so hard? I mean, Tiff Stratton's right there. Tiff, right there.
Well, look, Charlotte's out 9 months, and we had these plans, so we cast new Charlotte.
No, I mean, God, no, I don't even think she's new. There's no new Charlotte.
No, like, I know that. No, I'm one just, out there. It's just, I'm cracking wise because I was reading everything.
There's no one out there that Charlotte. It's just, this episode was a whole lot of things. It was the next 3 weeks of TV all compacted into tonight.
Yes, you have to, again, you have 2 months. Let it breathe, kids.
2 months. If you're not watching on video, actually, I don't even know if there's a video component to this, but if you're not watching, there will be. Two whole weeks of television that you could have done for the next 2 weeks without having to do everything tonight. But I digress. You just had to bring The Rock to Birmingham, Alabama, didn't you? To Birmingham, Alabama. I couldn't believe that. When I saw The Rock, was like, someone tweeted
that he was in a gym.
He was in the gym in Birmingham. Yeah. I'm like, well, that's odd because there's no way in hell SmackDown's in Birmingham, Alabama. And guess where SmackDown was? Guess
Birmingham,
where it was?
Alabama. Yeah.
It was in Birmingham. How'd you know that?
I don't know.
It was in Birmingham. So long story short, burying the lead, we are not. The Rock is back. He's wrestling Roman at WrestleMania.
Yes.
Cody has chosen Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. Bayley has chosen Io at WrestleMania.
Yes.
Who Rhea Ripley defends against is still unknown. It could be Nia. It could be Becky. It could be Bianca. It could be a whole host of names, probably Becky, as you said. Those are the best top four they could have done. What does Gunther do? Does he wrestle Drew, maybe? Does Drew be like, hey, you know what? I'm just going to go after, like, the hard-hitting guy instead of...
Oh, so it'll be just like last year with the triple threat.
Yeah, I don't want it to be that.
Sheamus will come back and they'll just do that all again. There we go.
I tell you what, though. Like... quit worrying about WrestleMania for right now because there's so much time away and the matches are going to be good. Even if you're laughing out loud at the way that Cody got to Seth Rollins again, who, by the way, Cody is 2-0 against Seth in their last two matches or whatever. Laughing out loud about how that happened, laughing out loud that The Rock took CM Punk and Cody's spot, laughing out loud at everything, right? Elimination Chamber is going to rule. You have Gunther in there. You have Drew McIntyre. You have still the unknown about what Rhea Ripley is going to do. So I'm guessing one Elimination Chamber is going to be for who challenges Rhea.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making that, if you do that, and Becky being in that, Tiff Stratton maybe being in that, Bianca maybe being in that, maybe Jade Cargill is in, and that's how Jade and whoever her opponent's going to be. I really hope they give Jade a WrestleMania singles match. I hope they're not afraid to do that because, like, I think it would just be, you have two nights, do it. Elimination Chamber is going to rule. We haven't even talked about Shinsuke Nakamura, right? Like, Shinsuke Nakamura he did the whole Cody feud. He's kind of a top guy on Raw. What is he going to do? Is it Shinsuke and Gunther? Like, what is Gunther going to do? What is he going to do? And on this whole time, I was like, Gunther could possibly he could make his way into one of these title matches. He could do it. And I was really excited to see it happen. Doesn't look likely now. But Gunther is the one that I'm like, I really hope they give him one of the big matches.
That's gonna be Braun. That's gonna be Bron Breakker.
I mean, it could be Braun, and maybe that's what you do, right? Because Adam Pearce tonight, I want to talk about this too. Tonight, Adam Pearce, Nick Aldis, they keep going in each other's throats, and Bron Breakker did not decide tonight where he's going to be. He did not decide tonight where he's going to be. He's going to show up on Raw. Adam Pearce, someone's going to have to give him something, and you have Nick Aldis on one hand, probably offering Bron Breakker a chance at Logan Paul, but Logan Paul's busy. He's busy with Kevin Owens right now. On the other, could that be it? Like, Bron, your first match on the Raw brand is going to be WrestleMania for the Intercontinental Championship against Gunther.
They should just let him be a Steiner. That'll be the offer. I'll let you be a Steiner, and I'll give you the match against
I don't even need you to be a Steiner, but Bron Breakker with two Ks. Like, that's his name now. Like, it's going to happen.
I know.
We said this for 15 years about Dolph Ziggler, and it ended up being an awesome name. Let's face it.
True.
It ended up being awesome.
Yeah.
Bron Breakker is the name, but maybe that's what they do. Like, we have to up and up and up and up. You want a big match for night one, maybe even night two. I mean, it's Triple H, so maybe he'll do it. Maybe he'll do it. I cannot wait to see Adam Pearce versus Nick Aldis.
I want to see Aldis in a WWE ring.
One on one.
It's gonna be like a tuxedo match or something. You know, where they're wearing the suits and the first person to strip it. It's gonna be a comedy match.
No. Well, if it was the Vince show, maybe. But you know what I would love? I mean, I would love if they actually did that match. And then I think it would be hilarious, but also kind of cool, because I think Adam Pearce and Nick Aldis could make it work. Adam Pearce mostly. Nick Aldis shows up in the wrestling gear and Adam Pearce is showing up in the suit. Like, oh, I didn't know we were actually doing this. Like, I didn't know I was supposed to actually try. I thought it was like two GMs.
Oh, no. I'll do you one better. He shows up in the suit because, oh, I didn't know we were doing this match. And then he takes off the suit and it's like, cut off t-shirt, jeans, knee pads over. It's like, oh, now it's a street fight. And he just goes after Aldis.
I once saw at the Hammerstein Ballroom.
Oh, nice.
Adam Pearce go one-on-one with a Mr. Brent Albright.
Okay.
Mr. Gunner Scott himself for the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. Front row seeing Adam Pearce in an NWA title match. That was, what, 15 years ago? 15, 14 years ago. Adam Pearce hasn't wrestled, I think, in at least 8 years. Maybe not quite. The NWA, when he had that run with Colt Cabana, was like his last big thing.
Oh, no, he had the quote-unquote match with Roman.
Okay. Anywho, I would love to see Adam Pearce wrestle. I don't know if he's going to be, like, trying for it. Although, I've seen this guy on TV. I mean, this guy looks like he's been working out lately. Like, he looks like a guy who's been working out for a potential match, or maybe he's just always ready. Like, Adam Pearce is old school. Like, he's maybe just always, he's going to be 75 years old and he'll be like jacked, ready to go with his suit, with his gear in his bag, like just ready to go. I would love to see Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce. I don't know why they keep going, you know, back and forth between the two of them. If they're not going to do some type of confrontation, let's say if they did Johnny Ace, Con Laurinaitis, versus whoever the opposing GM was it Stephanie at the time, whoever it was, they went so far at them and they had the battle, they had the eight man tag battle between SmackDown and Raw. They're going to do something with Nick Aldis and Adam Pearce. They're going to do probably something. I think
Pearce,
they set up
has me blocked on Twitter.
Well, you should be nicer to Adam Pearce. Okay,
it wasn't because he got a fight with an ABC campaign reporter who likes wrestling and started following me because of I think Fightful, and Pearce used a hashtag that references the Holocaust, a reference of wrestling angle, and the political reporter goes, really, you're using that hashtag? And it's like, for Holocaust? And they blocked both of us because Pearce doesn't like any he used hashtag never again for a wrestling angle, and got mad when he got called out on it, so he blocked everybody who called him out on it.
I'm not gonna lie. I don't know what any of those words meant.
That's okay.
But
are you done? Are you done ranting now, or you have some more?
I honestly don't think we got to even everything, but like that's probably where we should stop because
save
we
some. You have two. You have 2 months to come back on the show if you want to come back.
We were all over the map. I'm gonna say this is the bullet points you should take out of this. Right, Cody Rhodes' motivations are hilarious. Top four matches they could have done, they're going to do. So at least at the end of the day, when you look at WrestleMania, like what they could have done, they did the best they could. Like you could not have gotten anything better. You got The Rock facing Roman. There's intrigue. There's intrigue on whether or not The Rock will beat Roman. I don't think they do that. I think you keep going Roman. And then think about this. Say Cody beats Seth. He's the world's heavyweight champion, right? Roman beats The Rock. Then you really start asking what's next. Like, what could possibly be next? Because Roman's literally beaten everyone at that point. But SummerSlam comes around, right? And Cody wants to finish a story while also being the world champion. Do you have another unification match? Do you have another unification match where you have to like split titles later on again?
I'm sorry. You do this at the biggest card possible. And SummerSlam ain't it.
Does CM Punk return and win Money in the Bank? And then somehow like Cody, like literally Cody Rhodes, right, is about to face Roman Reigns for both titles.
Yeah.
And then CM Punk somehow like in the backstage area beats Cody.
45-year-old CM Punk with a torn tricep doing Money in the Bank. That's such a Vince move.
So Money in the Bank, right? Money in the Bank is what, June? It's
July.
A June pay-per-view?
July. It's usually July like, it's July 4th weekend, actually.
I guess CM Punk's birthday is in October. I was going to say, like, maybe he'll be 46 by then. Maybe he'll be 46. But hey, Billy Gunn's still going, and Billy Gunn looks great. Can he do a five-minute match? Nope. Nope. Gasses out pretty quick these days. But CM Punk doesn't have to ever worry about gassing out. Like, he can't even get to gassing out stage. He's just, like, he can't move, man. He's old, and he was never... The best part about CM Punk, he was never athletic when he was 28.
No.
When he was 28.
And he admits he's like, not athletic. That's what the weird part of him going to MMA. It's like, what?
Christian Cage stole the best gimmick CM Punk could have ever had. Is the outwork everyone and then just heel on everything and say it was all a joke. To be outworked you all. Like, Christian Cage is doing the best gimmick CM Punk could have ever done. And I will leave you with that bit of wisdom.
We'll see you during the road to WrestleMania.
God, if I survive it.
Hey, kids, now for part two, Chris Novembruno joining me.
Hey, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me on the show.
This is recorded 8 days after that audio. And we know a little more, and we don't know a little more about what the hell is going on with this Rockin' Cody thing. But let's get into it. What we do know, and I'm quoting from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer, is that Cody Rhodes won the Royal Rumble to face Roman Reigns to finish the two-year-long storyline of quote-unquote finishing the story when Reigns beat Rhodes at last year's WrestleMania. At the same time, Dwayne Johnson had signed on January 3rd in a deal with Ari Emanuel and Nick Khan to not just be on the board of directors of TKO, but part of the deal was to headline this year's WrestleMania, presumably against Roman Reigns, with Johnson noting the storyline had started years ago. Reigns versus Johnson was talked about prior to the pandemic as a one-time return match, and the pandemic got in the way of it. It had been considered for WrestleMania in Dallas in 2022, but Johnson pointed to Los Angeles in 2023 before backing out and saying he didn't have time to adequately prepare, but left Philadelphia in 2024 on the table. He's been stringing them along for a few years. That's me. At the time, a lot of people...
Yeah, it's just like he's keeping his options up. This is the fallback girlfriend situation, with like a company.
At the time, a lot of people figured it probably wasn't happening because he turned down Dallas for Los Angeles and he didn't do that show. His booking out actually led to Rhodes being put in the match in the first place, as Rhodes and Seth Rollins last year were to be in a match to create the second world title, which they delayed several months. After a press conference... Love this note by Dave. A misnomer, since the decision was made for it not to be a press conference at the T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, they ended up announcing Reigns versus Rhodes for WrestleMania. They ended up not announcing anything for Seth Rollins, nor any other match past teasing the expected Rhea Ripley versus Becky Lynch match, etc., etc. The belief is that Rollins will defend against the winner of the men's chamber match on the Australia show, and that there was a tease with the idea of Reigns and Rock versus Rhodes and Rollins tag team match, which could be on day one of WrestleMania. Rock ended up going heel on Rhodes, slapping him in the face after an argument about families and siding with Reigns. Rollins was out there at the time and ended up backing up Rhodes. The only thing we were told is that the idea was to create a fan groundswell for Rhodes and try and create a Daniel Bryan-like situation. And clearly that is exactly what happened. I'll push back on that. And clearly, that is exactly what happened. The idea was that he earned the title shot and was getting screwed out of it until, in the end, he wound up with it. Rhodes going on SmackDown and indicating he wasn't going to take the shot did make for a very inconsistent storyline. No kidding, Dave. Especially since it was clear by the next day he was getting the shot and the company was encouraging it. Now, of all the people to give an underdog scrappy storyline to. You don't give it to the guy who comes out in a nice suit and who won the Royal Rumble. I'm sorry. It's just dumb. All of this makes no sense. It feels like they had two ideas that they had to push together and somehow try to make sense. It came off that way to me on the quote-unquote press conference. It almost looked like they were setting up Rock versus Triple H, which can't happen with Triple H's heart condition. I don't know. I think this is just going a long way to do the same thing you should have been doing the entire time, and they should have just kept it simple, stupid, and they should have just placated Rock in another way. Chris, what do you think?
I think that, yeah. No, I need to use my microphone voice here for starters here. And I think that turning Rock heel ultimately is a good move, given that the crowd was not nibbling on this. But I do not believe that Dwayne Johnson came out on that SmackDown promo with the Cody handoff thinking this is not going to be well received. I believe that he thought him coming out, much like he even said, like they started a storyline and he's going to be the guy to finish it. I think that he thought that him coming out right then and there was going to be extremely acceptable to the audience, that he could Rocky the audience a little bit and get them on his side, and people would accept the handoff of the baton. And I think it became very clear over the weekend that was not going to happen. That was even more clear on Monday when you actually had a Rocky Sucks chant going on. And while WWE has sort of, you know, embraced the mantra of any reaction is good reaction, this is not the reaction that Dwayne Johnson wanted when he pitched this WrestleMania feud. You'll never get me to believe anything to the contrary. And I also believe that leaving the Royal Rumble, that Cody Rhodes, the performer and the you know, on-screen talent or whatever, believed wholeheartedly, both in character and out, that he was going to WrestleMania to face Roman Reigns. I don't believe that he thought that he was going to be going on to SmackDown the next episode and handing off his Royal Rumble win to Dwayne Johnson. Last, I will say that, yeah, you're right. This is not a Daniel Bryan story. Cody Rhodes in the suit is the formidable contender story. This is a guy who has worked his way up, and Roman Reigns has had unworthy challengers, not even unworthy, but like less formidable contenders. Whereas this guy, Cody Rhodes, is like the nemesis, the formidable contender. He, you know, he's the good guy, the Luke Skywalker going after Darth Vader, a worthy adversary. It's not an underdog story. And actually, underdog really goes in the face of building equity in the worthy adversary. The underdog's like the 1-2-3 kid, or like the little weenie, noodly armed guy who swings his fist real hard and accidentally knocks out the European champion, becoming the European champ or becoming the Intercontinental champion. They do that quickly, suddenly, it's out of nowhere. It's not a story to be completed, because the whole part of the underdog thing is like flash, like it just started. All of a sudden, the 1-2-3 kid rolls up Razor Ramon, and now we have a new on-screen talent. Cody Rhodes, the story, it is something that they built into. We have been critical about how WWE's presentation throughout this year hasn't done a particularly good job connecting the dots of how every one of these beats, going back to Brock Lesnar, for example, how Brock Lesnar is connected to capital T, capital S, the story. They didn't do a good job connecting that. But at the same time, all along the way, as Cody beats Brock Lesnar, as Cody beats Seth Rollins, as Cody beats all these people, he, not that he ever was, but he certainly is nowhere near the realm of an underdog anymore. He's now a guy who can win. And that is capital T, capital S, the story. I think they bungled this. I still would have had Rock turn on Cody. That's very clearly to me what needed to happen. I just wouldn't have done it at the presser. I would have had this happen on TV. I would have had the Rock betraying Cody as like a key moment on the road to WrestleMania rather than a thing that happens in a melodrama scenario. Though I will say, having watched it, the one thing I did dig, the family tree presentation on the screen and everything, that looked really good. Like, they did a very good job with that.
Yes, Drew Gulak doing the PowerPoint. No, to me, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, they made the deal with Ari and Nick Khan for Reigns to be headlining WrestleMania, and then they still went through with the Royal Rumble creative that they had set out. That just smells to me.
It doesn't
so much.
Sound right. Yeah,
it does not sound right. And the other thing was, I mean.
So let me ask you this real quickly. Okay. Do you think that bringing out The Rock then was like a move to sort of change the narrative a little bit on the Vince McMahon and the kind of the cloud that hangs over the company right now?
I think it was two parts. I think it was one, it was that. Even though when Rock joined TKO, Vince McMahon was still on the company board. But I think the machinations had been put in place that we're getting rid of Vince. It's just too much of a liability. I think the other part of this was that TKO saw what happened with the NFL playoff game on Peacock that was only exclusive to Peacock, and people had to register on that, and they saw dollar signs. And they thought if The Rock comes back to wrestle a match, that will bring in an influx of new Peacock subscriptions that they would split with the company, et cetera, et cetera. And that they could get away with it. I think for Rock, it was a very vainglorious move after the public humiliation of Black Adam not doing anything at the box office. And he was just going to walk into an already sold out WrestleMania and then be able to say, I headlined a sold out
WrestleMania. Yeah, right. Like The Rock. Yeah, The Rock is a sellout. Yeah.
Everybody was getting a little bit of something in this deal to me. And then they just decided people aren't ever going to buy this. They came to their senses a bit and said, no matter how much goodwill from the Attitude Era Rock has, and I don't, dude, if he comes and was going to come out and start doing his, you know, semi-homophobic spiels and talking about strudel and putting things up people's asses.
Yeah, I mean, right? Like, here's the thing about vintage Rock. It was a combination of semi-homophobia and semi-misogyny on a regular basis.
Yes.
And I think it was fun at the time for the people it was fun for, but that pool of people for whom it would be fun for now is much, much smaller. And no,
it's
going to
be the parent.
Diaspora.
It's going to be, it's for the parents of people bringing their kids to WrestleMania, because I had this kind of moment in Dallas when I went a few years back, where it's like the kids wanted to see the New Day. They were hyped to see the New Day at the time. And the parents were like, man, I just want to see the Dudleys put somebody through a table. That's all they wanted to do. So it's like, okay, you'll get a little bit of that. I don't think the draw was as big as they thought it might be. And I think
I hate to say this, I think there's more replay value in the Dudley Boys match than a Rocky Maivia match at this point. I would rather see the 50-year-old Dudleys put somebody through a table. They still have a moderately entertaining match, even though it's like the same, you know, gimmick or whatever. The Rock's match, we all forget this, I feel like. It's not that good. It's a John Cena match with a better eyebrow.
Well, the funny thing is, Rock is, here's how I put it when I was thinking about this. Rock is Steve McQueen to John Cena's Paul Newman in many, many ways. Newman's a consummate actor, whatever. McQueen was always kind of a showy. He was a decent actor, but he liked being a star more than he liked being an actor. And Newman, you know, Cena would come in. He did a clean job to Austin Theory, for God's sakes. Rock's never doing that. Rock's
and,
the kind of guy
one
who
of the
complains.
All-time great clean jobs to Brock Lesnar.
Yeah. Well, but Rock's the kind of guy who doesn't want to get hit in a movie because he's going to look bad. And he, you know, It's like, and why I said Newman and McQueen is because the infamous story is, in order to have McQueen agree to do the Towering Inferno, the credits on the poster had to be staggered so that both were kind of equal, and they both had to have the same number of lines. Now, Newman would have never done anything like that, but Steve McQueen would, and that's what The Rock is right now. Well, The Rock is very much Steve McQueen. He's a guy who... He still thinks he's a star. He still thinks he's going to be a mogul. I still think he's gonna try and angle to actually run WWE one day. But I think a lot of this was just Triple H standing up and saying, this is the creative plan that we went with. If you go against it, it's going to be very, very bad. And clear heads prevailed. That's what I'm thinking right now.
Yeah, like that the on-screen of Triple H dressing down The Rock was sort of a backstage take into on screen sort of narrative. Yeah, I could see that. Like that Hunter was, I mean, this is a very sort of Paul Levesque move, right? Or very Hunter move.
I could see.
Yeah, you take your dirty laundry onto the microphone and work it into the storyline
a little bit. But I could also see this being like a corporate thing where it's like, we know Rock's on the corporate board, so Rock's gonna have a match, and then Triple H can't have a match. But oh, there's Nick Aldis over there. We can put Nick Aldis in a match, representing Triple H as part of the company or whatever, and do some sort of dumb office politics story, and Adam Pearce is somehow involved and all that other crap.
The Pearce all this thing is clearly building, right? Like the in an effort to show that we have a unified front line is one of those great Chekhov's guns lines. I mean I actually thought that little bit on SmackDown, that the all this Scrap Daddy Adam Pearce stuff is, they're both doing a good job with it.
Yeah,
you know, your mileage may vary.
It's hokey, but they're doing a good job with it.
Your mileage may vary on the office politics thing, but like,
yeah,
a consistent thing about WWE writing, at least in the last several months here, is that there tends to be a little bit of room for nuance now, which has been nice.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, we'll get into nuance when we get to Lazy River, but I also think very much so, like, the Dakota Kai Bailey thing.
It's right. I'm talking, yeah, more in the mid-card. I don't need nuance in this main event story. I just need Cody Rhodes to effing beat Roman Reigns at this point and for us to be able to move on.
AEW announcing big business on March 13th from TD Ameritrade Arena in Boston. Announced on Wednesday without expressly mentioning Mercedes Moné, which is where it's thought she will debut, but they did mention Boss Town. Boss. Pre-sale sold 4,000 tickets. Venue set up for a little bit over 5 right now.
I hope it's Vince McMahon under a mask debuting for AEW.
No, and I took some heat on old Elon Musk's ex, because I thought they should go with the hard sell here and promote and say, yes, this will be where Mercedes Moné is debuting. Get your tickets starting Friday, general sale on Saturday, for two reasons. Number one, because you could possibly sell out that building, maybe, or you want to get as many tickets sold that first weekend as possible. Because right now it's only set up for 5, but it, you know, it's like a 15,000 seat arena, et cetera, et cetera. But also because WWE was having this big press conference, which was supposed to be a press conference the next day, and you wanted to steal some thunder from your competition a little bit. I thought, you know, and if somebody's asking questions, somebody's going to ask something about, hey, Sasha Banks has gone to your competition. You have any comment on that, et cetera, et cetera. You know, you can draw some focus away from there, but you know, they decide not to. They decide to do the CM Punk route, even though Mercedes is not as associated with the city of Boston as CM Punk is with the city of Chicago.
No.
But I think you promote. That is their job as a promoter, is to promote and say, hey, this big star is making their debut there. You're going to want to get tickets. And you could possibly get travel crowd as well. How did you feel about this, Chris?
I mean, it'll certainly be an interesting heat check to Mercedes Moné's sort of singular draw ability, because, you know,
They didn't say she was going to be there officially.
No, I know, right? But like going ahead, because like the company kind of, you know, we've seen what their local, you know, what their, you know, house numbers have been recently.
Yes.
Can Moné raise those? I don't know, man. I think she's very talented, but the way that this show is structured right now, Dynamite specifically, how much of a percentage of the show can you make the women's division? And
without losing audience, even though your audience isn't that, I mean, look, they loaded up that show in Phoenix and they only got, I mean, they were second for the night, but they only got like, I think like a little bit over 800,000.
Right. And also like how long? And I mean, maybe Khan's talked to Monet about like, you're going to be effectively the ace of this company. One of the new things that will define AEW is that our ace is a woman. I don't think that's what happened. If I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet that.
Yeah.
So she's very talented, but the way that the women's division is for both companies, but even more so for AEW right now, it's not the main course of the dish if you are buying tickets. So I think that places a real ceiling on her draw ability. It's nice to see her back. I'm interested to see how she fits into this AEW universe. Although also on that, I have my doubts just because this AEW universe is kind of a messy place right now, especially with like Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo and like everything that's happening in the women's division right now does not inspire massive confidence for Monet to come in there, bring order to the chaos and make a coherent story out of what has been a miasma of mediocrity.
Bad week for heads of smaller companies this week. TNA wrestling president Scott D'Amore been let go, with Anthony Ciccioni of TNA's parent company Anthem Sports Entertainment taking over as the new president. Company's press release states that the intent is to further integrate TNA into Anthem's entertainment group, which Ciccioni, I think is how you say the name, is already president of. According to the report from PW Insider, it is believed that the decision came directly from Anthem's owner, Len Asper. The rumor around is that D'Amore wanted more money to try and expand now that they've gotten kind of hot, or at least they have some good buzz going around them, and that Anthem basically said no. Personal editorial here. The talent had a Zoom meeting, and they announced there that D'Amore decided to step down. That always gets my dander up, because if you fire somebody and then they go, they decide to leave, that to me leads to an already dishonest relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally. I mean, it's, yeah, of course it is.
But
to misrepresent what the breakup is,
yes,
or the nature of the breakup, is inherently dishonest.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify?
Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
But DeMar done a lot with a little over there. I mean, he has some good wrestlers over there. He's elevated Josh Matthews. Josh Alexander. Steve Macklin, who used to be in WWE, is a star. You know, he has a great women's division. That's always kind of been the hallmark of TNA/Impact, is how good their women's division is compared to other companies in America, with the exception, I mean, WWE is such a deep bench at this point that they don't even use good people over there.
TNA's always been very, not always, but has on numerous occasions throughout their history been very good at maximizing their women's roster.
Yeah. And a lot of the talent very upset by this on Twitter, or at least saying thank you. Kind of goes into the next story. Stardom founder and booker Rossi Ogawa was fired by Bushiroad after being accused of attempting to poach talent to leave the promotion. Story dates back about 9 months ago when Bushiroad execs started overruling Ogawa to the dismay of both himself and talent in some of the more outlandish booking decisions. Ogawa constantly being overruled on booking and business decisions by Bushiroad fight president Katsuhiko Harada led to his decision to leave the company. Harada was later replaced by Taro Okada in that position in November. However, this continued under Okada, and Ogawa had already made plans to leave. He had planned to leave February 18th. Bushiroad decided, you know what, let's move that up a couple weeks. So Bushiroad decided to get ahead of the story 2 weeks early, made the announcement publicly that he was fired after the talent was told in a meeting following a show in Osaka. A lot of the talent is loyal to Ogawa, who founded the company and gave most of the women their career breaks. Expect several departures from the group in March when most of the contracts expire. That's the thing to remember here, is at Stardom, almost all their talent have contracts that expire at the same time. The only wrestler under a longer-term commitment to Stardom is IWGP champion Mayu Iwatani because of the movie of her life coming out. Bushiroad had known about talent leaving, and some were given legal threats in recent weeks. Those who are leaving wouldn't be doing so until their contracts expire. This is part of the story of why Julia will not be wrestling in Chicago, and had said she was taking time off in March when her contract expires. It's expected that Ogawa will take some of these loyalists and begin a new company. But things kind of rocky over there in Japanese women's wrestling. Also, part of the reason why Kairi Sane came back to WWE. Chris, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I of course am not an expert on what Rossi Ogawa has been doing.
I met him once. Nice guy.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
He was here for a Rise show when they were still running. When Rise was still, a women's promotion here in the States, kind of an offshoot of Shimmer.
Yeah. So, like, I can't speak directly to the poaching thing involving the women's talent. What I can say is Ogawa-san did contact me to leave Shake Them Ropes, and I have accepted starting in March.
Well, you're joking now? All right.
I'm very excited for my new position.
Okay, cool. Toby Keith, legendary country singer, performed on the first TNA show in June 19th, 2002, passed away on February 5th at the age of 62 of stomach cancer. Interesting note, big University of Oklahoma football fan, and not by coincidence, was also friends with Jim Ross and Jeff Jarrett. Toby Keith had offered to buy TNA from Panda Energy, and Bob Carter was in an agreement, but said, There's just one little hangup here. I want my daughter to be able to stay with the company, even if it was just as a ceremonial face with an executive title. Toby Keith said, nope, walked away. And that's when a lot of the problems began for Panda Energy and TNA. I don't expect you were a Toby Keith fan. How Do You Like Me Now is a great kiss-off song, but yeah, kind of sad. I mean, he was a huge wrestling fan. He was gonna buy TNA. I think he was gonna put Jim Ross on commentary there and have Jeff Jarrett run the thing.
Yeah, like no, he was actually like a wrestling enthusiast, and I do know that about him. It's just, I mean, I'm going to be going to karaoke night later tonight and singing a wistful version of Red Solo Cup.
Come on. All right, I'll move on.
Yeah, look, he's got a very mixed legacy, and yes. You know, I'm not gonna spit on the man's grave, but like, you know, he also
the figure four board already did that, those mentals over there. So
No. I mean, you know, like yeah, no, he did record that pretty gross song after 9/11, but like, you know, people are more than just their worst moment, but at the same time, I will be singing a wistful version of Red Solo Cup tonight.
You should sing a wistful version of How Do You Like Me Now. It's a better song. Ex-wrestling star. I'm not going to put ex-WWE star because that's kind of insulting due to the fact that I know him more from Crockett. But Billy Jack Haynes arrested this week after a fatal shooting left his wife dead. Billy Jack Haynes is...
Now, do they have any suspects?
Well, he barricaded himself when the cops came by.
Some people just don't like to be interviewed.
You know,
they care about their Fourth Amendment, Jeff.
It's like that line in The Usual Suspects. You know, the guy that you usually think did it, but we can't say that he's innocent until proven guilty. But Billy Jack Haynes has had some mental issues of late. I remember him mostly from number one. I remember him as the first guy to ever do the, full Nelson challenge, where can you break my full Nelson type of thing in wrestling from my youth.
Yeah.
I remember he had a sneaky Hoss tag team with Wahoo McDaniel that fought Ole and Arn Anderson at one of the Starcades. I think it was 85. That was just guys just beating the crap out of each other for my enjoyment. And then he went to WWE for a while. So Vince guy always left territories after money disputes. He was one of those guys. It's like, I think I should be paid like a star. Okay, I'm leaving, type of a thing. Returned in 90s WCW under a hood with Kevin Sullivan as Black Blood. Do you remember that gimmick at all? I don't know. Do you? Do you remember Black Blood?
Was that ever even part of the Dungeon of Doom formally?
It was right before the Dungeon of Doom.
He was from a
tiny little town in France, is how he was built. But I don't know.
I hope for his sake that they're able to find the killer of his wife.
OJ's on it now. Comings and goings. Amari Miller announced that she has parted ways with WWE. I thought they could have done a lot more with her. She was great in NXT UK, if that's the person I'm thinking of, the French woman, Amari Miller, I believe. And Brian Keith, the Bounty Hunter, and Shane Taylor both signed to AEW contracts. They should go heavy into the Brian Keith Bounty Hunter gimmick, please.
Right. The weird thing I heard is that like he doesn't even really do a bounty hunter gimmick. He just dresses as
it's just a costume. Yeah, that's all it is. It's the hook. It's his hook.
That's such a weird. It's like I don't want to do the gimmick. I just want to dress like that. It'd be like if I dressed up as a prison guard, although the Big Boss Man. but as a total non sequitur.
I just think
these guys look cool.
Yeah,
like something kind of tough about them. Yeah, I like the uniform.
You're not quite a cop, but you're not quite a geek.
You're not a security guard. You're like a prison guard. You're not watching Walmart. You're watching something kind of, but you're not a cop because, yeah, you know, a cat. Yeah. But like, so you kind of are in the middle. That's such a weird meta way of understanding gimmicks.
Yeah. It's like, I need a costume for this thing, but I'm never going to live this gimmick at all.
Right.
And you're like, what?
What? And it's even weirder to have a...
I mean, at least like, New Jack tried to live his gimmick, for God's sake.
Well, I don't even need them to live the gimmick, but, like, it's weird that the wrestler character...
Yes.
The character knows that it's not... that he's not a bounty hunter.
My gimmick is technical wrestler, and I go in there and I do no technical wrestling whatsoever.
Imagine if the Undertaker knew that he really wasn't an Undertaker, like in the early 90s.
I don't even know what a graveyard is.
I have no idea what the hell this shit is, Paul. Let's go.
What does Stone Cold mean? And on a kind of happy note, Steve McMichael wrestled from 1996 to 1999 with WCW, including a run as a part of the Four Horsemen.
Everyone's favorite horseman.
He, it's grown on me after watching it. I mean, he's better than Paul Roma or Jeff Jarrett. He was elected to the 2024 class of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Steve McMichael was a legit badass, kids.
No, he was a legit. Yeah,
he was the real deal.
He was a legitimate athlete in the 80s. There's no kidding.
Part of the best defense possibly in football history, that 85 Bears defense, which were killers. Mike Singletary. I'm trying to think. I want to say Richard Dent, but that might be after his time. But my God, those guys ate people alive. I mean, that Super Bowl was something like 46-15 because that defense the Patriots offense looked pathetic against those guys. But yeah, no, Steve McMichael, real hoss. I tend to think that a lot of the voting was due to the fact that he's on his deathbed now, and they wanted to get him in there to see that. So yeah, but
he deserves it though. He won.
It's a lot though, like the Cincinnati Reds getting in, you know, a couple of those lower tier players on the big red machine kind of thing. I mean, McMichael was an all pro, don't get me wrong, and for a couple of years. I mean, he deserved it. I don't know. Yeah, there are other guys on the ballot I think deserved it a little bit more, but, you know, whatever.
That's fair.
Raw and 2.5, boosted by the Cody Rhodes Rock, ended up with 1.889 million viewers, 0.58. Show did, SmackDown, almost 2.5 million.
Wow.
Dynamite. Dave's words, not mine, did a disappointing number for such a loaded show. The show that featured Sting going for his last championship, a major announcement by Tony Khan, Swerve Strickland versus Adam Page for a title shot. The Revolution pay-per-view did 805,000 viewers with a 0.28, 18-49, and a 0.23 in 18-34. And with that, we will start with the lazy river of wrestling criticism whenever we had time to watch. And God knows there was a lot to watch this week. And whatever's on our mind, we can do now. I will quickly give you ice cold takes on NXT Vengeance Day. Braun and Baron versus the Trick Mello gang. Fun match. Braun and Baron Corbin are boy, if they love tag teams on the main roster, I would have brought them up as a team just to destroy dudes. I mean, they are a hoss team straight out of WCW 1991. Love
two
those
guys. Two guys who are just jerks, like winning. My one thing is they can get along and have rapport with one another, but I need them to both still be jerks.
Stop the giggling crap.
Yeah, right. I don't need them to like I don't want them to become likable. I want them to like each other, and
I want them to like each other because they're both such jerks.
Jerks, exactly. Yes. Right now, it's Braun Breaker bringing out the nice side of Baron Corbin, presumably to beat the crap out of Corbin at some point. But like, I would go the other way. That Baron Corbin brings out the jerk in Braun Breaker, and they just become buds.
Trick Williams and Ilya Dragunov had a hell of a match for the main event. Of course, ending with Carmelo after the match turning on Trick Williams.
Trick's the real deal, dude. He's a quality talent, man.
Yeah.
It's been an interesting road to get there with him.
But too. I still like the rapport of a smaller, cocky, mouthy guy and a big dude back in his play. Even though they can both talk, I'm cool with that. I was a little sad to watch them split up. But Chris, this show featured the dumbest cash-in of a quote-unquote Money in the Bank type thing ever. Your girl Lola Vice cashed in during the Roxanne Perez versus Lyra Valkyria match to make it a three-way, and then got pinned.
It's so weird.
Just make people look good, people. That's all I want, man.
Right. Like, okay. I on one hand, I get even the argument that she wasn't ready for it yet, but you already put it on her. So now train her, get her ready for it, and make it happen. Don't just, you know, pull the plug on this thing before it even gets off the ground. Because, no, like, now she does look like a goof. And, like, you know, like, she's back on TV, you know, this Wednesday here, and she's having a match to try to, like, kind of get her swagger back. You know, get her groove back, yeah. So to speak.
Yeah, it's like Austin Theory cashing in for the Intercontinental title, you know?
Yeah.
That's a dumb move. They can try and explain it all they want, but it's still a dumb move when you have the shot at the big belt. Go after the big belt. Don't cash in the middle of a match. If you want to call your shot and be an honorable baby face, that's fine. You're an idiot. But
she wasn't even trying to be an...
No, she wasn't.
That's the really weird thing. Is it's like, this is a move that you might attribute to stupid baby face syndrome.
Yeah.
But this is instead like stupid heel syndrome, but impossible to understand from a ring psychology standpoint, heel syndrome. Like, why would a heel ever think to do it like this? You would wait for the two to have finished the match, hoping that, like, basically it was like a near, you know, complete defeat, and then just pin the other one.
Your turn, sir.
Let's talk a little Swerve Strickland, Hangman Adam Page here.
Okay.
Look, the crowd was very into this match. I thought it was a good and entertaining match. I am confused by the Page and Strickland dynamic, and like you can tell by commentary and also the crowd that they don't really know what the dynamic fully is here right now. Page is effectively the heel and Strickland is effectively the baby face.
Yes.
But even then, there's still every so often these echoes of Strickland broke into Hangman Adam Page's house.
That was a long time ago, Chris.
And to make matters worse, specifically to gain access to his children.
Yeah.
Not to break in and take the TV, which is still bad, mind you. It's not good to break in and take.
We're not exactly sure what he would have done to that child. The child
doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. The fact that the intention was the child is bad enough. It really should cause recoil from anyone embracing this man as a babyface. But with all of that said,
maybe that kid cries a little too much. Maybe that.
Adam was trying to do him a favor. He has an annoying kid. Yeah,
he has an annoying child. That's what it is.
No, so like, I enjoyed the match. I thought it was good, well worked match. I thought it, you know, had good intensity. I liked the end of the match where Adam Page is like, no. My only job here was to stop you from getting a title match. And then I hated.
I've just heard from the back.
Deus Ex Machina visionary Tony Khan coming in. And
you've had the power to go home all along. Just click your heels three times.
Yes.
You bitch. Why did you tell me that?
You want a competitive match. Then why not just have these two guys have the triple threat match with Joe in the first place?
Joe should have been out there screaming, almost trying to kill Tony Khan, saying, no, 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 make them fight again if you're going to do that kind of
thing.
This is
stupid. I was promised a number one contender. Exactly. I want a number one contender.
Yeah.
This is not a charity. Not everyone's getting a title match. Like, I hated that. It was lame. And more importantly, when you cut to Tony Schiavone, literally visually, and Tony Khan serving as the mouthpiece for Tony Schiavone, you remove agency, intrigue, and power from the protagonist-antagonist dynamic between Swerve Strickland and Hangman Adam Page. Prior to this, Adam Page had all the chips. He was the guy who had the thing that I guess our effective protagonist, Swerve Strickland, wanted. And then all of a sudden, Deus Ex Machina Tony Khan shows up, and it's like, no, Swerve, you get it too. That is boring.
But he doesn't
Everybody
show up.
Everybody gets a cookie is boring.
He doesn't show up either. He's a coward because he can't wait to get out there and tell you about March 13th in Boston. And, it's going to be a big thing. But he doesn't have the stones to come out there and face Swerve Strickland and say, yeah, you know, we said it was a number one contender match. You know, I'm going to have Tony Schiavone do it because I'm too busy in Gorilla to come out there and say anything.
I'll tell you what better. I think he doesn't want to run the risk of getting booed again.
Yes.
And that he that subconsciously, subtextually in his head, he remembers that time he came out and did all the CM Punk stuff. And that hurt his fifis real bad. He sat on that chair and nobody liked him, even though he was sitting on a chair. Yes. And he was sad. And that wasn't enough for people to like him. Jerks. Jerks, all of them.
Feared
so now,
for his life, and they booed the man.
Yeah, he feared. He was Phil Brooks is a disgusting, psychotic man who imperiled the life of Tony Khan in a way that had heretofore never been.
And a dog, yes.
And the dog, and then he comes out to add insult to near injury. Here, you have all these people booing him. And he didn't want that to happen again. But he also knew that this triple threat thing is kind of a stupid idea. So then you hand it off to Tony or Tony Schiavone because no one's going to boo Tony Schiavone. Tony's just doing his job.
Tell you who I liked. I loved that main event, and I love me some Big Bill. That dude, last week they set it up where Sting goes, I don't know if you're a killer. This week, Big Bill looked like a killer. Him bouncing Darby's head off the mat, trying to brain the dude in the middle of a tag team match, doing the boss man slam, deep six, whatever you call it, after the dive onto the floor. This was a match straight out of my youth. This is a match straight out of 86, 87, where guys were trying to rip each other apart. And far be it for me, I loved the Young Bucks thing afterwards. The white suit, Darby Blades, bleeds all over the suits. Dug that, but if this is just a hotshot deal to get the belts onto the Bucks or whatever, or just for Sting and Darby just for that one match, I find a way to put these belts back on Starks and Bill as soon as they can, because I love it. They overperformed as tag team champions. What are you doing?
I'm closing my door. I have my cats running around outside, and now it is... Jeffrey, it is snowing in Albuquerque.
Okay.
It is cold.
Let me continue my thought then.
Don't interrupt your own thoughts to be nosy.
Well, you're giving me vertigo while you're moving your computer.
Focus on your thoughts. Don't focus on my looks. Focus on your thoughts.
That's hard enough for me, and you know this.
I know.
Because my mind is all over the place at all times.
And sometimes I look real dreamy when we get
I love me some FTR, but boy, that win over them was effective to get the titles in the first place. This is one of those times where they put two individuals together as a tag team, and they gel as a team, even though they don't have a clever name, and they don't have matching gear, and they're not just two singles wrestlers doing, you know, singles moves like WWE always does. They had double team moves. They had strategy. I love this team, and I love me some Big Bill. That's all.
I agree. They're a good team. No, I don't have a deep insight on the Starks and Big Bill thing beyond what you said.
That's fine. It's your go then.
They make sense. You have the big guy. You have the little guy. Starks was starting to, increasingly finding he's so much better as a heel than as a face because he can be a weasel. And that makes so much sense for his character. Whereas as a baby face, he doesn't have a character trait like being a weasel.
He's cocky. He's arrogant. He's a little effeminate, which always helps as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's
a pretty boy.
Yeah.
It's not even.
He's a bit of a dandy. He's a bit of a dandy is what he
doesn't
is.
Doesn't want to get hit. It's that pretty boy doesn't want to get hit thing. I mean, you know, like I vibe. I liked that. Let's see what else was on Dynamite that was kind of worth talking about here. I don't have a lot of new things to say about Deonna Purrazzo and Tony Storm. Deonna Purrazzo just continues to flounder for me.
I want to get into this. Her presentation stinks.
No, she comes out and she's doing this to everybody.
She's doing the heel thing. Yes, the shoe off is a heel move.
That's a heel move.
And instead, it's supposed to be have the cameraman get back so that she can get all of me, but it's coming off as a heel move. She didn't say anything on commentary worth a damn. And then she's wearing like the Jericho style heel, so she's taller than Tony Storm, which is somewhat odd, but at the same time, it's like, why does Deonna Purrazzo have to be out there? Why does she have to have a live mic? do pre-tapes. She's effective in pre-tapes. We've seen her be effective in pre-tapes. Just but pre-tape her.
She doesn't, I mean, part of, like, she's not a strong promo, but the virtuosa is not a strong character.
It's a heel character as well. Yeah.
A virtuosa is
an arrogant, you know, look at how great of a technician I am.
I'm a great technical wrestler. But more importantly, it's arrogant, but like beyond that, like in that heel presentation, beyond that, it doesn't, as a babyface, does not immediately call out to any specific character traits or personality aspects that you might imagine. You know, like there is, it's hard to think about like what is a virtuosa as like a great artist, but like there's no, are they sarcastic? Are they funny? Are they kind? Like as a babyface, you have to have something kind of going for you, like that. She's snobby, is what she is.
That's what a virtuosa is.
Right. Yeah. It just inherently does not lend itself to positive characterization, which is why it flounders. Meanwhile, it's being juxtaposed with this so over the top you can't help but laugh presentation on Toni Storm. She'll never be that timeless Toni Storm character. Whether or not they want her to be a heel right now in this current moment, they did at one point, and it was never going to work because it was always so absurdist, so over the top. The second she's in black and white and speaking with a transatlantic accent, especially being from Australia of all places, like everything is getting into parody. I mean, even the initial setup, which is like, I'm timeless. And so like the cameraman's like, you're 28. The idea that like, you know, like the time has passed. Like the whole thing is so meta and goofy that it's not truly sinister. It's hard for a Deonna Purrazzo, even if she had a better character, to push up against this with any efficacy. And you see that with like the other intermediate baby faces that come out and face against Toni Storm.
Well, that's
like
just the other thing. Well,
Red Velvet never gets traction. A lot of these other baby faces don't get traction because the Toni Storm character is a hammy heel. They're a goofy heel. They're a likable heel. It's not the NWO cool heel thing, but it's campy heel. And you don't hate a campy heel. You kind of like, you're like, aw, they think they're bad. That's kind of cute.
You bring up a good point, because the thing that has been confusing the women's division a lot lately is they find someone that they, you know, this mid-card person that they like, and then they book her for 3 or 4 shows in a row or 3 or 4 weeks in a row facing both the babyface and the heel in a feud. So you had Red Velvet, who faced both Toni Storm and Deonna Purrazzo. You had Queen Aminata, who is, I believe, faced both as well. It's like, how are those type of acts, how are audiences supposed to react to them? Because to me, Red Velvet should be a baby face. But instead, she's getting boos because the crowd doesn't know how to react to her. And
there's still a little bit of residual damage from the Jade Cargill stuff.
Yes.
Red Velvet has never recovered from the Jade Cargill feud that she didn't win. That I think in hindsight, you can certainly make a case. Is she the World League? No, but of all the people that Cargill faced, Velvet was as strong of a person to beat Cargill as anyone. Now she, whenever you do this, where you have like a third talent go up against a baby face and then the heel, you have to think that the talent that's the third wheel ends up worse for wear. That they don't have heat as a baby face anymore, nor do they have like necessarily villainry as the heel. I guess you can sort of, it's more easy to protect a heel that you're putting in that sandwich situation, but it's a bad idea. I would certainly say it's a really bad idea if you're going to do the sandwich thing to do it with a baby face. It seems to me like a baby face can't possibly recover from the heat loss. A heel might have a little bit easier of a time where it's like, the main event heel or whatever squashes the smaller villain, kind of like a comic book or whatever, you know, like here comes the villain and they beat a smaller, lesser.
They beat
villain
a B villain. This guy's gonna be And that's one, you know, I love that kind of story.
That kind of thing in a sandwich thing might make sense, but every other, like, I would never put a babyface wrestler in a sandwich situation. I think it's just bad booking.
I have two other notes for AEW, if you don't mind. One,
yeah, sure.
Hechicero, it's the best luchador they've ever had in that company. everything he does looks like an actual fight, or he's trying to win the match. And I love that guy. That dude, him wrestling with Danielson, and Danielson getting frustrated at Cesaro having a reversal for everything he could do, was so great in that six man. And then one other negative thing. Chris Jericho. Why does he need to be the valiant babyface in this match? Why did this match go this long? Why was it main event style? And why wasn't he selling any weakness from the Kyle Fletcher match the week before? My God, they had him. He kicked out of a big move, and then he gets hit with a screwdriver, defiantly holds up the arm on the three count during the lion tamer, and then goes out. Why does he need to have a life and death struggle with Takeshita when Takeshita could be in your upper card main event scene? This should have been murder death, and I don't know why it wasn't.
In 2024, do we still?
We don't need weekly Chris Jericho.
Do we still think Chris Jericho's a star maker like that now in 24?
Like, he'll tell you he is.
Yeah, I know, but like the whole if you're thinking about this like with like an NBA team,
yes,
acquiring Chris Jericho at the beginning and the inception of AEW is the win now guy.
Yeah,
have him. He's the guy on your team for one, maybe two seasons at most to try to win that championship. They already did the title run with him twice now.
He did a great job to open this company, even if I didn't think it was the right move. I think they should have put it on either Kenny or Hangman. But yes, he did a great job.
Yeah, in hindsight, that was a bit of a mistake. But like, yeah, like I would have went somewhere else. But yeah, no, look.
And now he's Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah, they've squeezed all the Carmelo Anthony on the Knicks, like the late era.
That's what I mean. He's a name guy that they bring in because he's a name guy, but he's not really going to do a lot for you. But everybody around that says, "Oh, Carmelo Anthony's still a star, still can do something for this team."
Everybody remembers Melo, right? Yeah, no, or like bringing in Iverson late, Carmelo Anthony is a fine example. Like those late guys where whatever pluses they bring can't be overweighted by the minuses that they bring.
Yes.
And part of the problem, like in a Carmelo Anthony, Allen Iverson sort of way, like
Russell Westbrook,
similar metaphors for all of them. They demand a shitload of playing time.
Yes.
And Jericho is definitely one of these guys who he'll never be cool with coming off the bench metaphorically for 10 minutes. He is always going to be insistent that he's still at least a six man.
Yes. That's all I have for AEW. Where do you want to go next?
I guess we could talk a little WWE. I mean, I guess we could talk a little WWE. We got to talk a little WWE.
Main roster.
I guess we can circle back. SmackDown. I guess we already did SmackDown too, didn't we?
A little bit, but I'm gonna let me start with SmackDown though.
Sure.
Real quick. One of the more underappreciated acts on this SmackDown roster is Dakota Kai. I'm gonna tell you why. Because she is so versatile, and she is one of the, if I was going to teach an acting class about acting and wrestling, it would be Dakota Kai.
Because she did a really good job in this segment.
She is a dual threat in that she can play menacing real well, and she can play, how would I put this? The hurt animal.
Yeah.
The person she can play weak really, really well. And she is putting on a match because I think she turns on Bayley in whatever tag team match they do, because you'll know she didn't actually hit any of the other members of Damage Control with that chair. I think she's in on it still, and it's gonna be glorious to watch her be the puppet master of this whole thing. But she can do either, and she did well. I mean, her turn in NXT is one of my favorite things, especially the Mauro Ranallo call with it, because remember it's like oh, Mia Yim's injured. We need somebody. I don't know. Oh, you need to buck up and do this. And she gets out of the cage. Boom. She goes and she kills Tegan Knox. I mean, she was fantastic in that segment with Bailey. Absolutely. And the reveal last Friday of Bailey knowing Japanese and knowing this whole time and then having a pipe ready. Not a stupid baby face. I thought that was a smart move on WWE's part to make her look good and main event-esque.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the costuming of Dakota Kai still belies that she is a heel. She did a really good job, like, kind of creating doubt here. I'm with you. I think she ends up being the puppet master.
Yes.
The whole plan here is that she's going to be the promo slash mouthpiece.
Because she's understood Japanese this whole time as well.
Yes. Yeah. And she'll also be the promo and mouthpiece and be able to speak.
Yeah,
more
exactly.
But I also liked that Asuka was constantly looking at Dakota Kai.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Asuka's sneaky been really good in this whole thing, even though she's like the third wheel on it. You know, she's doing weird Hesher mom Asuka, which is kind of awesome. And, you know, with the weird contacts and the clown paint and stuff. But no, her visuals have been really, really good in terms of I think she's taking hints from Dakota Kai the entire time. If that's the story they're telling, it's awesome. If it's not, she's still awesome in this thing, even though she's taking a backseat to other people in it.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed this segment. I enjoyed this segment a lot. I thought that Dakota Kai did a really good job here.
Yeah.
This is a strong piece of business, as Jim Ross might say. Drew McIntyre continues to be entertaining as hell.
God, he's like, great.
God, he's so good. I sort of think it's fait accompli that he ends up winning the Elimination Chamber here, and we're currently on the heels journey to WrestleMania. But boy, it's gonna be a really fun journey. Everything from the CM Punk promo to just like the way he now really understands this character and this like smug. I carried this cup, like basically taking the babyface thing of like, I carried this company on my back during COVID in the Thunderdome and taking it way, way, way too far. Like imagine if you will, like you're working at a job and there's one day where your colleague Larry absolutely kills it. Like Larry's awesome. On that day, Larry is the hero of the day. And that day was now 8-9 months ago. And for the last 6 weeks, Larry has become an increasing jerk on a day in, day out basis. And Larry knows this subtextually. It keeps pointing back to that one glorious day where Larry was the hero. That is the Drew McIntyre story. It's a good one.
I'll improve it a little bit here. Larry is the guy who was made vice president for a day after the vice president quit. And then they decide to hire somebody new as the vice president. And that guy is having all the problems of being a vice president and wants sympathy. And Drew's not going to give a bit because he went through that for a day or so.
Right. And he could have been the vice president, but instead they didn't want him. They didn't want him. They wanted you.
That's a darn shame that office politics are getting to you right now. Gee. Maybe if you weren't vice president, it wouldn't happen. You know, that kind of thing. He's
Have you ever thought that maybe you're not vice president material?
Yeah, that's exactly it. He's the guy undermining him the entire time with no sympathy, but you know he's too good of an employee to fire as well. So you just got to take it the entire time. It's such a masterful stroke because it's so ties into everything he's done the last 2 years. And if he doesn't keep bringing up the CM Punk thing, we're doing something wrong. Like even with Punk on any commentary for like the press conference or something, every time Drew comes out, he should say, "Yeah, I'm living CM Punk's dream right now. Where's he at?" Yeah, you know, that kind of thing.
I'll go one better. I belt him at WrestleMania. I belt him at WrestleMania. He wins the title, and now he comes out as your safer world champion and just sort of paves the road for when Phil comes back.
He should come out to cult a personality.
Personality, yeah.
Do the entire it's clobbering time thing with the title. I mean, he should just be CM Punk on that following Monday. And it would be awesome.
Especially because everyone would be thinking he's coming back on one of those big returns. But instead, it's Drew debuting a new CM Punk style shirt or whatever.
Well, they did one. They couldn't use the actual meme, so they made a new one of him, like in front of the grave of CM Punk's WrestleMania dream. which is kind of awesome at the same time. But, you know, WWE can never do anything cool directly. They have to have their own property. That's all I really have for the main roster. I do have something for NXT, though.
Let's dip on over to NXT here.
There are four great tag teams in NXT. There's Braun and Baron Corbin, who I love. That opener on Tuesday between Idris Enofe, Malik Blade, and Nathan Frazier and Axiom was friggin' awesome.
Those teams are very good. That was a match I almost kind of moved past, and then like it started settling in, and I was like, "Oh, okay, these guys are doing a little showcase thing."
Up until Wednesday, Blade, yeah.
Yeah, they've really put it together recently.
Up until Wednesday was my match of the week because that was just awesome. Those two, and I love tag team wrestling. And then, of course, the underrated team in NXT, the Bash Brothers, Robert Stone's twin kids, who are friggin' sociopaths, both of them.
This Stone-Wagner thing is so, like, this to me is, if you're going to do an absurd character, it works so much better as an endearing, absurd baby face,
yes,
rather than an absurd heel. Like, juxtapose the goofiness of Stone and Wagner versus like the goofiness of like Tony Storm that we were talking about earlier here. It's all very goofy. Like Von Wagner is like Robert Stone's third son now.
Yes.
It's kind of, yeah. And now like dad's going to wrestle. I mean, the whole thing is goofy, but it's endearing. And more importantly, it's giving Von Wagner a ton of personality.
Yes.
And stuff that they can work with personality wise later on. You know, the kids obviously can serve as a motivating force for him. And they're instantly endearing. You will never be in doubt who's the baby face and who's the heel when Von Wagner goes up against, you know, whoever it is.
He's a lovable lunkhead is what he is. I mean,
yeah.
he's Fezzik from the Princess Bride, pretty much. You know, he's dumb and he's big, but he's strong as a moose, you know, and that's always a good.
And he's got a good heart, and yes, like they've really gotten that over too. I mean,
like I want to see him lose it, like somebody accidentally bumps one of the kids,
yeah,
and he just goes off.
I mean, Noam Dar's like a perfect foil, right? You have this like little twerpy heel with his minions, his flying monkeys, and Noam Dar can outsmart Von Wagner and all these things, but at one point, one of the metaphor or something does something to upset one of the kids, maybe makes the kid cry, and Von Wagner just loses it and annihilates all of them, and that's how he wins the rounds title. Even better, you know, Josh Briggs is certainly doing some interesting character work right now.
I like him a lot.
Yeah, Briggs and Wagner's a hoss fight I could be totally here for. And you could take Briggs' aggression to the next level by having him, like, beat up Stone or, you know, like, reduce – have him beat up Stone, up like, you know, Apollo Creed losing in Rocky IV. Kids are crying, and Von Wagner, like, vows that he's got to kill Josh Briggs.
Josh Briggs smacked around his former tag team partner, and I was like, yeah, you teach that wussy a lesson. Stop being a baby and fight for yourself, you jerk. You're in professional wrestling. There's no crying in wrestling. Now, between him and also Dijak's just amazing. I mean,
Dijak's great. I know, and this is a guy who's managed to recover from being T-Bar, and like, yes, you know, yeah, and still is having to suffer the T-Bar chants for it.
The entire NXT show was far more watchable without Booker T. I mean, Saxton's not great doing the color role, but especially, he's a hell of a lot more listenable than Booker T was.
I just wouldn't have had him do color
heel shtick
as heel shtick.
Yeah, he was doing a bit of heel shtick on there.
Yeah, I would. I think there's a way to do color even as a baby face where, yes, you have like, and for better or for worse, Booker T has actually shown a path on how to do that. It's not the ideal path, mind you,
God.
No, here's the thing though. I like Booker does a lot of bad things, right? But like stuff like just deciding that you irrationally love Trick Williams' theme song. I actually think that does do some nice work.
It does. It's like, yeah, McAfee, when McAfee goes into child mode, and he ends up loving Nakamura's theme.
Right.
Song type of,
yeah. The fan lives by proxy through the babyface color commentators' enthusiasm. If, in parentheses, if they are cool.
Yes.
If they are not cool, then it is very much your mom and dad telling you they discovered this great new band and they're called Nickelback.
Well, let's end it there then. You can follow me on X at CrapGame13. You can follow Chris on Instagram at DOCTOR_NOV. You can just follow the show. We update the feed on X at Shake Them Ropes. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. All sorts of podcasts for all different sorts of fandoms. Even if you don't like us, you can find something you like over there, including The Flagship with Joe and Rich. I am also part of Fight Game Media. I do a show called The Dynamite Show, where myself and Paul Fontaine thoroughly deconstruct Dynamite about 20 minutes after the show goes off the air on YouTube and in your podcatchers the next day. You can find that at Fight Game Media, wherever your Fight Game Media is sold. Chris does a lot of things, including he's a mountain man, he's Grizzly Adams, killed a bar when he was only 3. Give me your plugs.
So for those of you interested in my mountain existence, you can see all of that up on the Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. I also teach music lessons. Feel free to contact me there. Through Instagram, I'm happy to take on new students, definitely accepting them. Been teaching more of them as of late here. Started getting the masters back on the EP on the first track. I think the second track came in the email here today. I need to take a listen to it tomorrow. So there will be some sort of like music release thing, not in the so distant future at this point, because I, in now like 2/3 of the EP is actually mastered. So I'll be putting it up on Spotify, and then you'll have a new thing to not like that I've made.
And again, thanks to Rob McCarron for joining us as well.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.